Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Q3 2021 CESB Earnings Conference. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded. Following the company's presentation, there will be a question and answers session for analysts and investors. Should you need assistance during the conference, please press star zero to reach the operator. The link to access the webcast featuring audio and slides is available at the CESB Investor Relations website at ri.cesb.com.br. The presentation is also available for download at their website. The following information and figures will be denominated in Brazilian real as per the Brazilian Corporate Law, Corporate Act and accounting practices adopted in the country, which are also in compliance with international accounting standards such as IFRS, except when otherwise indicated. Before we proceed, we would like to clarify that any statement made during this conference with regard to CESB's business prospects, projections, and operational and financial targets are based on management's beliefs and premises, as well as currently available information. Forward-looking statements are no guarantee of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, seeing as they refer to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not come to pass. Investors must understand that general economic conditions, the state of the industry, and other operational factors may affect the company's future performance and may lead to results that materially differ from those expressed in said statements. The following presentation will be conducted by Mr. Mario Bertoncini, CEO, and Investor Relations and CFO Marcelo de Jesus. Now, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Mario Bertoncini, who will begin the presentation. Thank you, everyone, for joining our Q3 2021 earnings call. On today's agenda, I will start by briefly going over the highlights of this quarter. Then we will be talking about the development of our litigation liability and litigation asset. Then we will address the energy market and our commercial strategy. And right after that, Marcelo de Jesus, our CFO, will take us through the migration of CESB's current pension plans within the Vivest Foundation and also CESB's financial performance during this quarter. Following that, I'll come back and talk about the reorganization proposed by our controlling shareholders and then make a few closing remarks. Following that, we will have the second part of our call with our Q&A session. So starting on page four, we have the highlights of this third quarter of 2021. From a hydrological standpoint, this was a very challenging quarter. Over this period, our GSF was 51% versus 66% in Q3 of last year. This was a decline in the GSF or an increase of the burden on Brazilian hydropower plants that was significant, which made it challenging for us to balance our supply. What we have currently are signs of improvement, essentially in inflow and rainfall starting in October. We will also be talking about that. In Q3, we formalized the extension of our Porto Primavera concession for 7 years and Paraibuna concession for 15 months. This was within the renegotiation of our GSF. With regard to our commercial strategy, our balance exposure has been equalized both in 2021 and 2022. We are now only fine-tuning and monitoring so that they're equalized in terms of the variations in our GSF versus what was forecast. But the brunt of this exposure has already been equalized both for this year and next year. We also made progress in long-term sales of energy in the open market, especially for the relevant 3 years for now, for us right now, 2024 through 2026. With regard to financial performance, our adjusted EBITDA for this quarter was 143 million reais, with an operational cash generation of 152 million reais, bearing in mind that the concept that we use for operational cash generation is after correction, but before only three events: the principal, the payment of dividends, and also the cash that we set aside to settle potential litigation liabilities. So we reached 106% of our EBITDA in Q3. Also, we continue to reduce the litigation liability by a gross 1.5 billion reais over this quarter, which was very, very healthy. Also, lastly, among highlights, Previc also approved the migration of our pension plans within Vivest. So we've started the program to communicate this voluntary migration of pension plans. We expect to be concluding the migration process by February of next year. Moving forward on slide 6, we talk about the litigation liability. Back in June, in Q2, at the end of Q2, we ended the period with an overall liability of 10.57 billion. Since then, as I said earlier, we've reduced our overall liability in gross terms by 1.5 billion, or a net 1.3 billion, net of monetary corrections and interest from the courts. Therefore, by September 2021, the overall liability from litigations came to 9.3 billion reais. Our probable evolved from 1.6 billion at the end of Q2 to 1.3 billion at the end of Q3. Therefore, a decrease in the potential liability by 336 million. The highlight of this quarter, which accounts for just under half of this reduction delta, has to do with Delta's main lawsuit, which is the one involving Panorama City Potters. We've launched a digital platform, and by agreeing with the courts, we had the adhesion of several people. The window of adhesions just ended, and 1/4 of claimants adhered to the settlement, bearing in mind that this involved just over 1,200 claimants, and we were able to settle with about 25% of those. They removed the name from the lawsuit and received a sum, and this sum we were able to reduce to about 1% of the value that they claimed. This was a sum that was agreed in court, and it was both agreed to and validated by the courts. This accounted for just under 50% of the delta for this quarter, and the other reductions also came from settlements within the realm of our lawsuits. We're also happy to say that over this fourth quarter, reduction has continued in our litigation liability. We expect to be able to conclude some of our negotiations that are really material for CESP throughout the year. Next, on slide 7, we talk about the Trazer Mel's lawsuit, there was no change in the proceedings over the last few months. I don't know if you remember, but the last change was in June when the judge required both parties, both CESB and the government, to manifest about the end of the probational period. So the end of this period where you could check the expert analyses. So we were in favor of an immediate judgment, understanding that everything so far had been done very technically and that it addressed the needs of both parties. However, the government required a new expert analysis. We are now waiting for another decision from the courts about whether this probational period will end or not, or whether we will be appointing a new expert to maybe give his new opinion or have another analysis, or if we will have a decision by the lower court. Once we have new developments about this process, we will be informing all of you. So moving forward a little bit about the energy market on slide 9. As most of us here in the call were monitoring that and know that this was an extremely challenging quarter. The hydropower supply situation currently is still inspiring and warranting caution, but we already see signs of improvements in inflow and rainfall over Q4. We're already starting to see the start of a recovery process. What we have on the chart on the left is the development of our inflows compared to two very critical years, 2001, when we had the water rationing, and also 2014, another critical year. And as you can see on the graph, the dry season between April and September, we see that the inflow in 2001 and this year was the worst on record, and significantly worse than this year than those two other critical years, 2001 and 2014. What we see on the graph on the right is how much stored energy we have for our market, for the Southeast and Central West. Currently, we have our reservoirs at 18% and showing signs of recovery for the next few months. In addition to that, it should be mentioned that the operator has been diligent in its management of both our water sources and our thermal dispatch, trying as best as it can to preserve our reservoirs. On slide 10, we talk about the energy market, specifically the consumer market. What we have on the left are the curves for energy consumption. We've seen a very predictable recovery in consumption over 2021. What I can say about the higher consumption in 2021, the power energy consumption for the year as a whole, has been 4.2% higher than last year and 2.7% higher than that of 2019, still pre-pandemic. It's been following a very specific and very traditional pattern, so there has been no breakaway from market expectations. It's also important to note that the regulator has shown a decline, a voluntary decline in demand, which has contributed to the mitigation of our problems and are moving out of the crisis. What we have on the right side of the screen has to do with our prospects for inflow in the coming months. We are having a very positive October, wet and slightly above the historical average. And here we're talking about the relevant basin, which is where the Paraná basin is. Most meteorological institutes attribute about 90% probability of for the occurrence of a moderate La Niña by the end of this year. Therefore, we should have a November and December that should, if not be within the historical average, should not break away from it very dramatically. On page 11, we have the effects of that for CESP. As I said before, our balance for both 2021 and 2022 has been equalized, and the GSF has already been forecast for both years. What we have on chart 4 on this page is the net balance, and right now we are at zero. What you can see is a long position of 100 megawatts in December. Once again, chart 4 for the month of December. So 100 megawatts, which is not necessarily our real position. It has to do with the discrepancy between GSF at CCEE, which is what we based this chart on, as compared to our forecasts. We are more conservative about the GSF for December than CCEE, which is why we have this position on the chart, because according to our internal forecasts, that is not exactly what we will see. Our 2021 balance has been equalized at a purchase price of 243 reais, which is what you can see at the last bar on chart number 3. But it's also important to say that this month we had a dispatch out of the order of merit, which had to do especially with the thermal dispatch during the energy crisis. Also, at some of the time, we bought more energy than we needed, which also had to do with the GSF we had projected, and we ultimately sold that energy with a positive result. If we pencil in all of those results, this price, 243 per megawatt hour, becomes a net price of 206 reais per megawatt hour, discounting the benefits we've obtained with the out of order of merit dispatches and also some sales of energy that have nothing to do with the trading activities of our sister company. On slide 12, we talk about our commercial strategy in selling long-term energy contracts. Over Q3, we continue to diversify our client base, which is what you can see on the chart, the pie chart on the left. And we could also decrease the sales of energy by 60%. These sales on the open market occurred at a average price of 72 reais the megawatt hour, which is very interesting. We were able to obtain a very good window. So now I would like to turn the floor over to Marcelo de Jesus, who will continue by talking about our pension plan with Vivest and also our financial performance. Thank you, Mario. Good morning, everyone. So moving forward with CESP's earnings presentation, we will now update you on the migration of our pension plans and also our next steps in that sense. Before giving you the update, I'd just like to remind you of the profile of our pension plan. This is a plan that's made up of about 6,000 beneficiaries. About 80% of these beneficiaries are retirees, and another 20% are pension beneficiaries. The average age is 69 years old, and they receive an average benefit of 7,000 reais. As you may remember, at the end of 2020, our deficit, considering Previc's methodology, was close to 20 million reais, which was caused especially by the breakaway of the IGPM inflation indicator last year. Unfortunately, that dissociation, that disconnection is still true for this year. And also, we had a very negative result in the stock market, which also affected the profitability of this plan, especially during the months of August and September. So we should expect this deficit to increase substantially by the end of 2021. We are monitoring its performance, and as soon as we have the recalculation by the actuary, naturally we will be disclosing that. So moving on to the recent events about our migration plan, on August 21st, Previc officially approved our migration plan, and that allowed us to then trigger what we are calling the roadshow, which is precisely to communicate the outline of the migration plan and its advantages. We have toured about 10 cities and 19 meetings. These events covered, at least considering locations and not necessarily the number of benefits of the beneficiaries, about 50% of beneficiaries being represented, which account for 65% of our exposure or our liability. So this was significant coverage, and we will move forward with this communication plan. Another important fact that came up during the, or is coming up in November, is what we call the individual mathematical reserve. This is the sum each beneficiary will be entitled to and will be able to transfer from his current plan to a defined contribution plan. And this is the sum that they'll be able to transfer. That's important because as of right now, beneficiaries will have an overview of their current asset, which they currently don't have. And this will be helping them decide whether they should migrate or not. Along with that, we are also providing a simulator for these beneficiaries. This is a software that will help them simulate what would be their benefit within the defined contribution plan and how much they would have to withdraw every month so they have a benefit that's similar to what they have currently, and also how that reserve will progress over time. That way, they will even be able to create an inheritance plan, a family inheritance plan for their family. So these are some important steps that we should see over the next few months or the next few weeks. We should start that in the early weeks of November and also continue with the communication plan. So after that, we will officially open the migration deadline, which should be of 4 months. So we expect the migration process to end by February of next year. And if necessary, we could extend that for another 30 days. Another important point that we should highlight is that obviously migration of pension plans is important to mitigate future risks, but not only that, the main driver of our deficit is the breakaway of the IGPM indicator, and we are already discussing with a number of stakeholders the change of that index. So we would shift from IGPM, the general market price index, to the IPCA, which is the general market price index, or the broad consumer price index, I'm sorry. So moving forward on slide 16, we show you CESP's financial performance over the last quarter. As Mario said in the previous slides, our EBITDA was impacted by the water crisis that we faced in the last few months, and which was very critical, and which led the adjusted EBITDA for Q3 2021 went from 236 in Q3 2020 to 143 in Q3 2021. So the margin was very much affected given the need for higher purchases and also the higher prices. The increment in our costs is connected with a few of our strategic plans, including the very program to migrate our pension plans, but also and especially the seasonal effect, seeing as in Q3 of last year, we were still at the height of the pandemic and a number of businesses were closed and services were restricted, and all of that changed in Q3 of this year. So there's the effect of postponing spending, which occurred in 2020 as well. We had a positive MTM effect by 19 million. That has to do with the improved prices, as we've seen recently, as well as the realization of what we had sold the market in previous quarters. Also, even though we've adjusted this for EBITDA purposes, it's important to remember that in corporate EBITDA, we had the positive effect of the GSF renegotiation, both for Puerto Primera and for Paraibuna. That provided a 7-year extension for our Primavera concession. This renegotiation was allowed for in the amount of 782 million net of the impairment adjustment. And so we had 483 net GSF renegotiation. Once again, an extension of 7 years in our concession. So moving forward, on slide 17, we show you the company's cash flow. Our cash flow net of the debt service came to 151 million reais, or 106% of our adjusted EBITDA. This is strong cash generation, but in addition to the EBITDA per se, there's an improvement in our working capital because of the credit that was released that had been with CCEE. Also, we paid the second installment of the dividends of 2021 in the amount of 250 million reais. When we look at our leverage in Q3, it was 2x our EBITDA, and that increase from 1x last year to 2x this quarter is first of all the decrease in our EBITDA because of the water crisis, as we saw in the previous slide, and also the number of dividend payments in the last 12 months. For the 2021 dividends, we had payments in April and September, and also the last installment of 2020 dividends was paid in October of last year. So the last installments of 2020, the two installments of 2021 were all within this 12-month period, which consumed the company's net cash flow and affected our EBITDA. This is why the company's leverage increased during this period. And lastly, a piece of good news. Mario will be talking about the reorganization proposed by our controlling shareholders. But after that, Fitch announced its prospective change in our credit rating because of that announcement. So once again, I will turn the floor back to Mario, who will be talking about the proposed reorganization. Thank you very much, everyone, and have a great day. Thank you, Marcelo. So moving on to slide 19, we'll be talking about the reorganization proposal. Early last week, on October 18th, our two controlling shareholders, Votorantim Energia and CPPIP, controlling shareholders via our VTRM instrument, proposing that we combine our assets. Their proposal was released in full to the market, even including a relevant or material fact, better saying, which proposes a transaction in accordance with CVM's instruction number 35 via an independent committee, which was introduced this week based on line C of this instruction number 35. This independent committee, which has already been set up, will now go into an analysis of that proposal and valuation of the assets involved, as well as making the necessary negotiations and submission to the CESP board and CESP General Assembly, a formal proposal of reorganization. What this proposal allows for is the consolidation of the CESP assets in a new instrument called a new VTRM. According to this proposal, this will be a company listed on B3's Novo Mercado, containing the assets that it currently detains, particularly the wind farms northeast of Brazil. And after a migration of minority shareholders from CESP, will have 100% of CESP's controls, as well as assets from Votorantim Energia, in particular the energy trader that is also a share in assets of energy generation to compose the portfolio. As for the timeline, after the material fact and the proposal is received on October 18th, on October 21st, the independent committee was actually set up. And now we tentatively estimate that it will take as much as 90 days for the independent committee to conclude its works. Once again, it's a tentative timeline. And an extraordinary General Assembly should take place in up to 150 days, after which the migration process would begin. Moving forward, and in closing on slide 21, I'd just like to say that once again, this was a very promising quarter for CESP. We were able to evolve despite all of the setbacks that we faced. I think we were successful considering the situation. We progressed in our GSF and also in the hiring of energy for 2024 through 2026 in terms of conditions and price, and continued diversification of our client base, which is very important. We continued to reduce our litigation liability. And lastly, we had the reorganization proposal, which I think, if successful, will check three very important boxes. First of all, it will help diversify our generation assets, which is 100% hybrid and very diverse in terms of renewable energy, maintain high levels of governance, which is always very important, and will also enable a new stage, a new phase of growth in a much more accelerated way and with a lot of financial solidity. Lastly, the independent committee will conduct its valuation and analysis and negotiation for this transaction, ultimately proposing an actual trade. I'd like to thank everyone for their attention and start the second part of our call with our Q&A. Thank you very much.
We will now open the conference to questions and answers. To ask your question, please press star one. Our first question comes from the webcast platform. Mr. Andres Sampaio from Bank Santander asks, good morning. I have a few questions about the Potter's lawsuit. I believe that an important part is finding all claimants. Could you update us on how many of those claimants were found, and of those, how many of them agreed to settle? And what should we do about the other claimants, and how to reduce the contingent lawsuit liability? Hello, Andre. Thank you for your question. You actually touched upon the greatest challenge in this case. We have 2,147 claimants, and we conducted a wide-ranging campaign to find them. It was not only a campaign to broadcast the process, but also to locate them and locate their contact information, a telephone call or a mailbox address that we could reach out to. We could find almost 50% of those. And of those we managed to reach out to in one way or another, we were able to convert about 85% of them. This exceeds the 25% of the overall number of claimants. Now, our greatest challenge here was to find those people. Now, from this point on, we move to a second stage of this process. We are still trying to do that with the lower courts, which is to verify, to have an audit of this claimant pool to see whether the remaining claimants are actually legitimate claimants, whether these people exist, whether they worked at the pottery, and whether they really are legally entitled to answer for anything within the negotiation. So that's our main focus from now on. This is a due diligence, a very close evaluation of this pool of claimants within this lawsuit. Now, within the proposal that we had, we tried not to change anything one case to another, but we are open to negotiations as far as the courts agree to settle with more people, obviously within the initial offer. We're not closed to new negotiations. Then we will have the trial in the local courts, remembering that the jurisdiction is São Paulo, so we should have the trial take place here. Our next question, also via webcast, comes from Mr. Gonçalves from Essa Acid. The valuation number communicated at the time of the consolidation, will that be disclosed? Marcelo, we already have information from the controlling shareholders, and I think it's understandable that they do not plan to share with the market their valuation. We have shared the amount that they came to when they valued these blocks of assets, and I think it's understandable that they do not plan to share that with the market. What they have committed to doing, Marcelo, is right now to have an independent committee set up and starting their works. What they will do is make available to that committee the entire set of information so that the independent committee will have full access to all the negotiations of the controlling shareholders and the amounts that they calculated. The independent committee will then have to make a decision about what the level of disclosure they will make and how much of the works and the conclusions that they reached will be shared with the market. We have an idea about what will look like based on other situations like this, but sometimes that type of sharing really hurts the subject. Maybe you have energy balance strategy and liability and asset related strategy. And if that's reflected to the market in a modeling situation, that will affect, because we have sensitive data just as everyone else in the market does. Our next question comes from Giuliano Ajeje from UBS. The company has conducted great work since its privatization, but the value of CESP in the trade relationship with negotiators was below what the market expected. When will those estimates be available to investors? The possibility of a major change in value is possible in the final asset. Hi, Giuliano. Thank you for your question. Let me try to answer that, supplementing what I already said for Marcelo's question. First of all, that will depend on the independent committee's decision regarding what will be made public. But we always have to be concerned in our specific case about what will be made of CESP's figures. Obviously, it was widely disclosed that the valuation expires on June 30th, 2021. So yes, that could have an impact on the valuation, the set of assumptions that will be considered. I believe you'll understand me when I say that our role at CESP, if the evaluation or the valuation process begins, I would rather not make any comments about that. I think our role at CESP is to support the independent committee for them to conduct the work as best as they can. They will have CESP's full support, and our discussions, data, and opinions will be communicated to them, but I'd rather not comment to the market or open that to the market so that it won't affect the independent process within that committee. There's a second question from Mr. Giuliano. The macroeconomic scenario has deteriorated over the past few weeks despite the improvement in hydrology. Do you see any possibility of default in the next few months? Well, we do not believe that will be the case for CESP's portfolio. We have following up very carefully with that. We have a robust and diverse portfolio, clients that are very resilient. With regard to the credit to customers, we are very selective and very cautious. We've had no instance of delinquency or anything that indicates delinquency. And just as we weathered very well the worst of the pandemic, I think so that will be moving forward. I'm sorry, we had an interruption. I was answering Giuliano's question about delinquency. So just as we didn't have any problem with during the pandemic, we do not see any sort of problem with regard to delinquency moving forward. Our next question comes from João Pimentel, BTG Pactual. Good morning, guys. I have a question about contingency. Of the probable contingencies, how much of that is related to the Potter's case? Good morning, João. Thank you for your question. The Potter's lawsuit contributed with $700 million in the decrease of that overall litigation contingent. So just under half of the amount. The rest of the reduction has to do with other solutions that we've implemented, as well as a few favorable judgments that we've received during this period. So they contributed with $700 million to the $1.5 billion that we mentioned. Our next question comes from Antonio Junquera from Citi. The possibility of Votorantim purchasing the available assets for energy in Brazil exists, and in that case, would those assets merge with the group only after the potential merger Votorantim CESP? Thank you. Well, Junquera, thank you for your question. I will reserve the right not to make any comments about potential M&A opportunities. As it's been widely said, this new period with the new CTRM one of the main focuses of the company would be to determine its growth strategy, whether in its wind and solar assets, but also in hydropower. We are monitoring the market with the idea of moving forward with that plan, but I can't really, at this point, make any specific comments about your point. Our next question comes from Mr. Frederico. How will the independent committee make its decision? Is there a possibility of consensus, or could the decision be made by a majority? As for the EGM decision, will minority shareholders have a right to vote? Frederico, with regard to the independent committee, in the pure concept within the law, it would be a majority vote, but they're sovereign in how they will work internally. So they could decide, for example, for a consensual final vote, and ultimately decide how their final say will be given. As for the EGM, I once again turn to the regulation, and it says that an independent committee had to be set up. Now, one thing that's important to be stressed again this transaction. It extrapolates the process. So far, CESP has been conducted in a very harmonious way. So I believe that will occur with in such a way that's very, very focused on consensual decisions. So we might decide within the EGM in a way that's not really relevant in terms of quorum, because every decision should be very consensual until that point. So considering the good relationship we have between controlling shareholders and minority shareholders, I'm very confident that we will have consensus, full consensus in this transaction, and it might become a benchmark in that sense. Our next question comes again from Juliano Ajeje from UBS. The new CESP will be highly focused on growth. With great expertise in trade from Votorantim, how will that be able to contribute to your growth? Also on the issue of growth, may the increase, is it possible that the higher Selic will prevent you from growing as much as you plan to? Thank you for your question, Juliana. Well, this is not just about the new VTRM, any energy generation project in Brazil or the rest of the world that needs a robust trade pool that has the ability to serve clients in many platforms and many place, different places, whether that's with products or services that set itself apart and requires digitalization and market intelligence, even to be able to deliver their products on time, that is a requirement, and you can't do that in a small scale. So today, it is very difficult for a major power generator to enable its operations and be competitive in terms of value addition without a trade department. I think one of the main advantages of the new VTRM will be that with the trader, they will have the expertise with a number of years. With the consolidation, the combination of those two things make us a benchmark in the Brazilian market. So even more so in the past, we will now become a source of addition of value for the company. You also asked us about the higher benchmark interest rate, Selic, and whether that could change the situation for us. Well, the increase in the Selic rate, which is circumstantial for Brazil, it does not change our capital allocation or our growth strategy. It is unlikely to have any impact for us in that sense. What it could affect is the pricing of our assets. That obviously has to factor into our M&A strategy, obviously. Our next question comes from Ali Nasser from Capitalo. Of the $700 million that the Potters lawsuit contributed, how much of that was in the probable contingent lawsuit liability? Ali, thank you for your question. Look, this process had already included an estimation of a probability of success in negotiations, and we saw that as a way to anchor the amount. So the forecast for the provision of those 50% was already very close to the ultimate settlement values. So in that sense, the sum that was actually paid was not very different from what we had forecast. It's important to say that here at CESP, we already have a level of forecast that's very accurate and very close to what is occurring in practice. Obviously, we are always trying to exceed that and to do the best that we can. But it's worth noting that in this specific case, the payment was of about 6.5 million reais, which was very close to the 20% value that we had provisioned for. We are now concluding the Q&A session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Mario Bertoncini for his final remarks. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining the call. We have an intense process from one-on-one to conference to be able to serve the entirety of analysts and investors who want to ask their questions. With regard to the proposal for reorganizations from our controlling shareholders, we will also keep you updated. So once again, thank you for joining us and have a great day. CESP's teleconference
is now concluded. We would like to thank everyone for joining us and have a great day.